Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome back to I'm Not Being Funny But, the podcast I apparently still record in my cupboard. Here on I'm Not Being Funny But, we ask the questions you pretend you knew the answers to or the ones you didn't think to ask. Today we are asking the question, what am Ireland? I'm a 27-year-old girl living in the UK and Ireland's pretty near. In fact, it's so near that I have a passport for it. Recently, though, I've been confronted with all the things I wasn't taught about Ireland, all the things I don't know about Ireland, and the things I definitely pretend I know about Ireland. I don't know anything about Ireland. Luckily, I have my two friends, Richie and Steve, who unfortunately couldn't fit in this wardrobe with me, so I went over to one of their houses to record this with their fancy microphones. They have a podcast called What Am Politics, and it's bloody amazing. I really recommend you listen to it. But first, we are going to find out, what am Ireland?
Some questions, but don't want to seem mean. Ireland, have no fear. The podcast here, it's I'm Not Being Funny, but with Lena.
So I am here with. Can you introduce yourself, guys?
No.
Oh, okay. So I'm here with two fucking random Irish guys I found on the street because they're everywhere.
Yeah.
Why aren't you all in Ireland?
Go back to where you came from.
Wherever I move here, there's Irish people. So I'm with Richie and Steve from the podcast What Am Politics?
Mm-hmm. Which is the worst name podcast ever.
Which basically was born out of Richie's ignorance. and his intellectual big brother Steve, who explains everything to him.
Yeah, that's an excellent way of putting it.
Is that
it?
One of the more creepy ways you've had your friendship described?
Oh,
back
God,
to
no.
You?
Actually, that's probably the tamest. Yeah, the way we described it in the past was I am, when it comes to political issues, I'm like a toddler. Mm-hmm. And so I'm turning to Steve, who, you know, studied political science, who knows the stuff inside out. It's like his everyday.
Sure.
Which is what you do for friends.
Well, that's the thing. There's a problem with having a single news source for most of these learnings is that it could be entirely wrong and telling me nothing but lies.
I mean, that's basically what most of the population do, though, isn't
well,
it?
Well, that's true, yeah.
Like, but mine, it's just no less impartial.
Mine just happens to be a good friend, so.
I think it's fine.
It works for us.
So, you guys are obviously Irish, mainly because of your accents, but obviously because of other things.
I'm actually wearing green today, I didn't realise.
So the reason I wanted to talk to you guys, godfathers of Ireland, is because I recently got an Irish passport.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Is that how you genuinely feel about it?
Do you genuinely
feel jubilance?
I am. Yeah. I know some people back home were kind of complaining about the... So back home, the passport authority, the department of the Irish government who looks after passports... were kind of understaffed with the recent wave of people making applications. And I know they had to do a lot of last minute upstaffing to try and keep up with it. And I know certain people back home were complaining about it. I think it's great. Mm. It's an obvious choice for a lot of people, especially yourself, given the familial connections. Mm. I know Colin Firth is turning to Italy, but Ireland's much closer to home for you. So like, I think it makes sense.
Sorry, you don't get Colin Firth, you just get me.
Yeah.
Colin Firth's Italian.
Colin Firth's Italian, yeah.
Jesus,
Italian citizen.
As if he didn't have enough going for him already.
He's so suave.
I know, right?
Yeah. How do you feel about it, Steve? Have you had anybody, like, maybe I'm treating it in an okay way, but are other people treating it in a more arrogant way?
I don't think anybody, I haven't heard anybody begrudging it actually, like, and cool. Normally Irish people begrudge everything. We normally have something to complain about.
You wouldn't have helped. If there's a problem, you know about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think people are pretty happy with it. I mean, everyone understands that the Brexit thing is a huge disaster. And I think we kind of empathize that people need to get whatever they can to prepare themselves for it. And plus, like, I mean, it's there. So you have an Irish parent or grandparent, I think it is, then you can like, you're entitled to it. Why not?
Yeah. No, my mum's Irish. She was born in Dublin, like lived there.
It's pretty Irish. Sure. It's pretty Irish.
Although she, you know, she doesn't have an Irish accent. And, you know, it only really comes out when there's disaster. So when the referendum was announced, she was like,
bollocks.
She was immediately like, no child of mine is getting stuck in this country. She got a really dangerous low voice on and ordered me some forms. This before Brexit actually happened. She was like, so I already got it just before Brexit happened.
Is it, did she have in the corner of the room like a break glass until, like, in case of Brexit? Yeah. And it's just behind it, it's just the application for an Irish passport.
I think everyone should have one of those.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I wanted to start with the first thing that occurred to me when I was like, and I'm going to say I spent about 5 minutes Googling this, I'll be real. Although, like, I was recently in Ireland and I did ask a lot of questions. Although, unfortunately, there's not that many people about in Ireland to ask.
What do you mean? There's just no one there?
Yeah, there's no one there. Anyway, so I have been trying to listen to people. But one of the things that, like, that immediately comes up whenever you Google, like, history of Ireland is the word Aya, E-I-R-E.
Okay.
So that is exactly. So we started.
Yeah, era.
And that is the word for Ireland in Irish.
Yeah.
Yes.
Cool.
Great start.
But when you like, so, but do you like, I always find it really weird that like, do you ever find it weird that we've changed the word to say Ireland? Or do you ever, like, did you grow up knowing both names? Did you always, like, grow up in your consciousness, were you like, I am an Irish citizen?
Yeah, like,
that one's pretty easy. Yeah. It's, we speak English, so when you're speaking, like, a German, when they're talking about Germany, don't say, as I was walking home to Deutschland, they say Germany.
Yeah.
So we're speaking English, so we say Ireland. If we were speaking Irish, you're supposed to say era.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, and it's like, it's one of the first things you cover in first class, Irish.
Did you learn Irish at school?
You do, yeah, poorly.
You have to.
Yeah.
You have to.
It's a requirement right the way up, yeah.
Can you speak some Irish now? Not to make you a performing monkey. Do people do this in pubs?
Not in Ireland. The people in Ireland don't turn around and go, oh, yeah, yeah, go on, say something. I'm going to kind of go dulgiddy on theirs. That means kind of go to the toilet.
Amazing.
That's the one that's drilled into most people when you're a kid, because they make you say, like, certain things in Irish when you're in school, and asking permission to go to the toilet is one you have to use every day. So that's the phrase that's drilled into my mind the most.
I mean, it's the useful ones that stick.
There's not a single day that goes by that I don't use it, so yeah. Especially in London.
That makes sense. These are very stupid questions, but like, would you say, like, most of your friends speak Irish, and like, is it like a I lived in Wales for 3 years, and a lot of local people, there's a big push in Wales to start learning Welsh again because they noticed that about 2 generations didn't speak it at all.
Right.
Is there like a big movement in Ireland to get people to speak it? Is it common to speak Irish? Like,
Well, Steve, your answer might be slightly different to mine, but none of my friends in particular, no, sorry, not none. There are definitely ones who are fluent, but not to such a degree where they're just casually dropping in and out of English and Irish, you know, while chatting. Like, it's not like there's enough of a network within the circles I grew up in back home to just come across a bunch of people talking Irish to each other.
It wouldn't be like being bilingual.
Some of my friends are, like, they're totally fluent, and they're very proud of their heritage, and they put a lot of emphasis on Irish. Peter, who we had on the podcast for our politics of language episode, he's part of a huge movement back home to try and bring Irish back, take it out of the Gaeltacht regions, which are the regions of Ireland where it's kind of these pockets where it is the language, and try and take it out of these very, very rural regions and take it into the cities, like into Dublin, into pubs, and into more everyday kind of stuff for people. But Steve, would any of your friends be fluent? Would, like, many of them?
A handful, really. And like, and sometimes I'll be surprised to find out afterwards that they are fluent. Irish speakers, when they're like bopping around normal cities, they wear these little gold circles on their, like, on their chest, like pinned on. So that's how they identify each other if they want to speak Irish.
Is that real?
Ever see that?
Yeah, it's real. Yeah.
Are you afraid that
I'm
going to
be aware that you could totally lie to me in this, and I can fully lie and you'd be like, oh.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I can't remember what the thing is called.
It's like an Iron Man where he has that big glowing circle in his chest. It's exactly like that.
And how do you feel about that? Like, that people don't speak Irish, or, you know, would you? Do you think we should be moving? Is that a controversial question to ask?
No, it's not. I wouldn't say it's a controversial question to ask, just us casually. I'm regretful that after all the years and years and years I spent learning it in school, that I'm not fluent, that it's not more of a part of my everyday, especially how much it's part of the Ireland's identity. So I'm a little bit regretful about that. So I'm part of the problem that, you know, Irish isn't more widely spoken.
I mean, you're
spoken.
Living here. What are you doing?
Yeah, exactly. There's just a lot of things wrong with Richie in his story.
Steve's keeping it real.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He stayed in the homeland.
But certain people, like, so Irish, you have to study it in your second level education for junior cert and leaving certificate. The two big examinations you go through in second level education. People are always talking about getting rid of it so that's not a mandatory language, because you already have to learn, say, French or German or Spanish or some other language. And why are we learning? All the usual arguments come up, like, why are we learning this dead language or this dying language? It's irrelevant. It's not going to help me on the global scale. On the global stage, you know, I'm not going to get like a highfalutin tech business job where, you know, liaising in Irish is a big part of it. So why am I bothering to learn it? The counterpoint to that argument, Peter did a really good job of illustrating it on our episode. So not to
signposting. Go and listen to it, guys. Yeah.
Not to, like, just, the episode's not going to be full of me constantly talking about different episodes, but this one in particular is very, very relevant. And the counterpoint to that argument is very well articulated by Peter, who talks about, you know, this is part of your identity and this is part of who you are and where you come from. And it's very important to the foundation of us as a people. And so, you know, it's only right we treat it with respect, and we maybe, you know, try and adopt it more and encourage it for the people who want to learn it. You know what I mean? Not to force it down everyone's throats or whatever, but if you are proud of being Irish and this is part of your pride, then why not facilitate this?
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy, isn't it?
Kind of is, yeah. Really is.
It's scary. Mm. Yeah. So I thought we could like roll this off with the most embarrassing thing I'll ever do. Is
really?
Maybe so I think I'm gonna I think what my plan is is I thought I could summarize the tensions between the North and the
Oh, do you
and the Republic.
Oh, wow.
And see how wrong I am. Like, you could even have buzzers if you want. to put some real pressure on.
Yeah, I think the buzzers might be the sound of Steve falling over.
Like, oh, God.
Yeah, frothing at the mouth. If you hear Steve going into cardiac arrest. This is fantastic.
Father forgive.
I was envisioning asking you something similar to the fact that you're bringing this to us.
I mean, bringing the real comedy and dragging opportunities. Okay. Okay. A long, long time ago.
In Irish, that's fado.
Fado. Where are we? I'm never going to start.
There's not enough beer in this can.
I'm already gone. Everyone was proper pagan long time ago. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Well pagan.
Well pagan.
And then,
proper pagan,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, proper pagan. And then the Normans was me, because my name's Normington. My surname is Normington. I came over. Well, you know, the Normans came over and they were like, yo.
Yeah, bastards.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry about it. They came over and they were like, Catholicism, hey, which is obviously just Christianity, because it's the only type of Christianity. So they made Ireland pretty Catholic and a lot of England pretty. He's already squeaking.
Oh my God.
Do you have something to say, Steve?
No, keep going. Steve, shush, okay? We have to be respectful.
They made Ireland pretty Catholic. And then England decided to be Anglican because they were dicks. And we had a really fat king who fucking hated his wife. So we became Anglican, and then we were like, can't have them being Catholic. So then...
I'm expecting you to go, and then, like, the potato famine was an inside job. by the Church of England.
That's just something I learned in my job at a broadsheet newspaper. So then we became Anglican. England became pretty Anglican. And they were like, fuck this, they can't be Catholic. We have to control them. So they, like, took over Ireland. And they were like, you have to be Anglican. And Ireland was like, nah. And then there was a big argument. And they were like, do you know what we need to do? We need to plant Anglicans. And they got loads of English farmers. So no, Scottish farmers.
Hey.
So that's what, which I think is what my granddad was. Oh no, my great-great-great-granddad. So it was like 400 years ago.
Yeah, I was going to say your granddad. That's fucking hell of a granddad you got.
We live
he was pretty late
a really
to the party.
Long time enough.
Yeah. He's over in Ireland now trying to bring
greens,
it back.
Guys.
Is this what the planting is happening then?
He's trying to, your granddad's trying to start his own plantation like now in 2017.
So I think that's what, where my Irish history stems from is lots of Scottish farmers being moved to Ireland to start farms and make and push Irish Catholics out of their farms and get them to work for the farms for ship pay, like proper under living wage, not even living wage. I don't know. Anyway, I'm doing well.
Worse than McDonald's at the time.
Worse than McDonald's.
Yeah.
They weren't having it.
No.
Lots of fighting.
Fair
Easter
amount.
Uprising.
Easter up, okay.
The egg. The
Easter rising.
Good that year.
Rising no. up, and then.
That's the movie title. It's like Easter Rising: Rising Up.
Directed by Michael Bay.
Sounds like a great like title of an album. Anyway, and then lots of fighting, some troubles.
Troubles. There you go.
Lots of troubles. Lots of separation, and then now you're cool, but that might be because of Europe. Because one of the things that helped was that the Republic of Ireland joined Europe and changed the euro, and obviously at the same time Britain joined the Europe, and then they
joined
were
the
like
Europe.
Sweet, we'll open the borders, chill. And then and then we left for Brexit.
The end. And now you know the rest of the story. Steve, how did she do? How would you grade, if this was a paper that was handed up to you, how would you grade it?
I'd ask her to repeat the year.
Repeat the life.
Yeah.
Start at birth.
Yeah.
Relive life.
So is that like, did you guys get taught any of this stuff
absolutely
when you were in,
none
in
of
school?
That. None of that.
Really?
Mm-mm. No, it's not on the curriculum at all.
At all.
And I've recently read the curriculum, and there's definitely nothing
on
there.
Yeah, I saw your video. Your video was very good. It was,
oh, thanks.
So I can plug you back.
A bit more eloquent than that was.
Yeah. So just before we get into corrections, because there will be some.
just wipe it and start again.
Yeah. So you said there was no mention, like what, like, no mention whatsoever. Like, how did Ireland come? Because I assume you had history modules, and I assumed something. They must have touched on it even a little bit.
So we touched mainly on the Reformation and how the Anglican Church was created.
Okay, and
I'm
then
not gonna
tangentially,
lie.
It just.
I mean, I did go to an Anglican Christian church,
of course,
school,
okay.
So that might have been why. But like, I'll be honest, like it genuinely wasn't touched.
And how would you feel your peers? Like, what would their version of what you just said be? Do you think they would be any more confident? Or
I mean, so I lived with a few people in university who did not know that Ireland, like the Republic of Ireland, was independent from the UK.
No, in
until
university,
our third
you
year
say
of university,
that's not a requirement.
When it came up in a very awkward taxi ride with our Irish friend.
Oh, I'm sure.
But I know I'm just speaking for me and maybe the circles I run in, but I would say like that's like I'm probably middle of the road.
Yeah,
and I know it's bad.
Yeah,
you're like there's a look of regret. In Richie's eyes. I can't see Steve's
eyes. I can't believe I invited you into my home.
But yeah, I genuinely think it's something that we're not taught about. And
right.
Also it's something that's not talked about. Like, it's not something we're like, oh, it's weird that we know we're never taught about that. And it's not something we, in a post-mortem kind of way, look back at our education
yeah.
and go, why don't we know about Ireland? We're like,
yeah.
Ireland, they got on with their thing.
Yeah, yeah, they're cool now.
They're nice.
So therefore,
oh, but as soon as it's St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Everyone's
that's a different
Irish.
Story. Yeah, that's
the part that makes me the most sad about that though is that like part of Ireland is in the United Kingdom, mm-hmm. is part of the same mm-hmm. country.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was the point I was about to make.
I mean, I think that's what the big rub for a lot of people from Northern Ireland.
Of course.
Is that we don't even know, you
of
know.
Course, of course.
I mean, but if you ask me about Scottish history, I'd probably know about as much.
Yeah.
Cornish,
oh, okay.
Cornish history, true. Gone. What is that?
Who knows?
What,
yeah.
Cornwall?
Yeah.
That's just God's waiting room for English old people
about?
To wait to die.
Oh my God. Oh, how beautiful. Yeah, like so like I lived in America for a couple of years and the level of the lack of particular knowledge, like what you're describing there, is very prevalent. And that, I think that's the case across the board, because Ireland is this weird, has this weird history of we're a nation of immigrants. So we're always, like, way back to the famine, we've always been, you know, leaving and heading to the four corners of the world and setting up new lives. But we're also a very, I would say, sociable and chatty nation. We've got a lot of very articulate people. Basically, it's a very windy, rainy island. So all you do is drink and write. You know, that was historically the pastimes. And so we had a lot of excellent writers and people who could go out, like, once they went, could tell a story or share a message. And so I think that's one of the reasons why Ireland is such a well-known, for such a small, little, windy island, like a tiny, tiny little island. It's very well-known across the globe, but it kind of only goes skin deep. And a lot of the subtleties, as you drill down, are lost. That's fine when you're in West Coast America, but, you know, for our closest neighbor, having that same knowledge, given our history and given how interwoven we are, I think it makes it a little bit sting. It makes it sting a little bit more. Yeah, because, like, it's not like, hey, we just spot each other across the room. We've got a long and complicated history going back.
Yeah, yeah.
And so to not have that level of awareness, and I, living in London now, I do encounter it quite a bit. Like, the All-Ireland final, our national sport, was on a couple of weeks ago. And we went to go see in the pub and had a great time. And afterwards, we met up with a couple of friends, and a couple of them, like, English, didn't know that Ireland had its own national sport. Yeah. And you know what I mean? And this is a thing that had just happened that day. And it's, like, a big, huge thing. And at the time, I was like, I know about cricket. I know about the Premier League.
Yeah.
Isn't that work both ways a little bit?
Do you think, I think like, and again, I don't really know, but I feel like part of the way the curriculum has been constructed before is that any topic that is contentious in the news, currently being debated, and they feel that people's, like, parents of the children's, like, opinions could go either way, they just steer clear of.
Really?
Yeah. And there was a lot of, like, Irish, like, Irish families in Coventry, like, where I'm from, but it wasn't really spoken about, or, you know.
Interesting. So let's go back to your summary, because I'm interested to get Steve's, like, red Sharpie comes out and what
don't
things
hold back.
He circles, what things he highlights.
We can start with the pagan analogy.
Yeah, it, yeah, being well pagan.
It wasn't an analogy, it was
just, you fell at the very first hurdle. First of all, it was Celts in Ireland and Saxons and Anglos in the UK. There was no Normans around when this was going on.
Oh, damn it.
Ireland actually became Christian before the main British island.
No way.
And most of the missionaries were going the other way, going over to Christianize the crazy pagans living in Scotland, Wales and England and Cornwall, which was its own country back then.
How did I get that then? Well, I don't know.
And here we are. If we knew that, then I don't think this podcast episode would be happening.
I didn't know that at all. Okay.
Yeah, that's not really that well known, because, and St. Patrick, our most famous saint, he's actually Welsh.
Yeah.
So back in those days, like, I guess it's like six or 700s, Ireland was kind of the strong country around the time at this area. So they were, like, going over and raiding and stealing all the stuff that they could from Britain. And they actually grabbed a few slaves from Wales, including little Patrick, who was a shepherd. And he got taken over to Ireland, had to work as a slave for a while, broke free or was released, I can't remember, and then went to Rome, became a priest and came back and did all the Christianizing. But it had already been pretty well done by then, but he gets the credit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he's a saint.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. That's why he's a saint.
He also got rid of all the snakes, apparently, although there's not a lot of evidence.
I have to call him on that one. Take away his sainthood.
All the snakes are gone. There were no snakes before. There's no snakes now is all I'm saying. Yeah.
look around. Any snakes? No, but Patrick, that's not... rest my case.
Snake emoji. Yeah.
No one questioned that back then. But go on.
And then the other bit is that there was never really a single point where you can say that the English came over and took over Ireland. Because... it's like Dublin was a Viking city and then became an Irish city, but it was always kind of trading. And there was actually a lot of people that I guess you would call them English now living here. And it was kind of what was the Pale, because it was a lot more English and Saxon than the rest of Ireland, which is more Celtic. So, like, even now today, if someone from the countryside in Ireland wants to make fun of Dublin, they call it the Pale to try and insinuate that it's less Irish than the rest of the place. It's kind of like a chip on the shoulder that a lot of Dubs have. So eventually I think the Normans came over and conquered a bit, but then they eventually just started riding loads of Irish people and became Irish themselves. And then
tale as old as time.
Then the English came over with, I think it was Henry and a few of the others, and he tried to call himself the King of Ireland. And then when he declared himself the Protestant king, he tried to do it in Ireland as well, but everyone just ignored him. And you're right, it wasn't until they actually started the planting that it really turned into what you would call a colony compared to just like another European kingdom that was swapping hands every so often. And there was a couple of big battles between the Irish aristocrats and the British. And eventually all the Irish aristocrats left and never came back. And basically Ireland was just there for the taking. And that's what happened then. They moved in. British landlords took all the lands pretty much in the whole country. But especially up in the north, they moved in a lot of Scottish planters, took the land and put them there. And they're the people that would be the Unionist Protestants that live up there now, who aren't actually Anglican. Most of them are Presbyterian, would you believe? Huh. So, yeah, that's Brendan. Then, you know, revolution, this and that, killing English people, which is our national anthem is about. Independence in 22, declared a republic in the 50s. And here we are today. We have the euro. You guys don't. And now you're leaving the European Union and you're going to make it very difficult for me to drive home when I have to go through Northern Ireland.
Thanks, Sus. Lena. God.
Public enemy.
Yeah. And then we have this podcast, which is just like the convergence of all of the things we just talked about.
Interesting. Yeah. So I didn't know a lot of that. But like, did you learn that at school?
Not really, actually, to be honest, because our education system is pretty flawed as well.
Yeah.
When the Irish state was built, a lot of what the guys who like led the revolution and then took over afterwards when the English left was to develop an identity, like a proper Irish identity. Because for about like 400 years or so, Ireland really was part of the United Kingdom. And a lot of people like would call themselves British without thinking twice about it and would be as Irish as I would be today. Mm-hmm. It was just like a dual identity. Like someone would be European and Irish. They could be British and Irish back then. So then the guys who wanted independence and freedom started to really emphasize the fact that no, we're different. We're like a Celtic nation. We used to speak Irish before we were forced to speak English, and we shouldn't have anything to do with them. They're oppressors. And then a lot of the identity of being Irish was made to be not English, like anti-English, if you get me.
Yeah, so it kind of like exists as a binary in that everything that Ireland is what England isn't. Oh God!
Exactly. And a lot of our, like, I mean, for primary school, the history that you're taught are actually Celtic legends, and you're taught about them as if they're true, like kids turning into swans and all these other crazy myths. Like
that wasn't true.
Still
waiting
to send us one.
I'm waiting. Oh, someday.
Just to clarify.
It's just like that ugly duckling story. Just like,
forever a gosling.
Yeah, no, Richie, the story of Richie is just like the ugly duckling who grew up to be an ugly duck.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
So you're learning already.
Also embarrassing, but mainly interesting. And I think maybe you can't have one without the other.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, welcome. This is basically every episode of What on Politics. It's just me going,
I mean, the Irish people, we got a huge advantage over you guys in terms of knowing more about your neighbor, because we grow up watching English TV all the time. It's like in Ireland, we only have four channels, and all the other channels that we get on our TVs are UK, like Sky, BBC, Channel 4, all them. And most of the TV that's on them is better, so you just watch that.
Yeah. Mm.
So like, we're being surrounded by your culture all the time, so we're learning your history just by accident. Whereas you guys, I guess, hardly ever have any. I mean, you probably couldn't name any of the four TV channels now, could you? That we have.
You have four?
There we go. There's your answer. Do you know Father Ted?
I do know Father Ted.
That's the start. Actually, that was a Channel 4.
I was like, isn't that what we created to mock you?
It was
like
a hat trick production. Yeah, it was
like
Channel
calling
4.
Gavin and Stacey Welsh TV.
Yeah, they did take it to RTE, but they didn't like it. We were in the stranglehold of Catholicism at the point, and they didn't want to see.
Do you have your own soap operas?
We do.
Yes.
We have two, Fair City and what's the Irish one? Rosneroon,
yeah. Stephen Fry was on that, speaking Irish.
Stephen Fry was doing like his special on languages
of the
world.
I'm going to go back and watch these.
He went and he learned Irish, and he went on an episode of Rosneroon, and he spoke very well, very articulately. He also, around the time of the equal marriage referendum, he put out a plea on QI, Oscailge, like in Irish, and was super eloquent. Yeah, I just love Stephen Fry, so I'll...
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's really nice.
What a ledge. Mm-hmm. So as part of that, I think that something that people refer to a lot, but I genuinely have very little idea about, is the potato famine.
Inside job.
More in that, when I had an Irish housemate, we hid a potato, she didn't find it funny.
Wait, what happened? You hid her potato?
Well, we always
took me a second to register that.
Look, come on. She broke into my room and put all my furniture on my bed. So
and your response was to hide her sponge.
So the rest of us, so basically we always played, so it was about four of us and we were like, what should we do? What should we, how should we get Irene back? And then someone was like, hide her potatoes. And I was like, not really sure why, but we'll do it.
Oh my God.
She wasn't happy.
And was she offended by it?
Only a little bit. I mean, it was a pretty pranky house. There was one time I froze her eggs.
That's good.
Have you ever seen a frozen egg? Anyway, not the point. What, like the potato
famine?
Wait,
was the frozen egg thing racist in any way, or is that just like a fun thing?
I think it was a fertility joke.
Oh my God.
It's not a very complex one, but it was definitely a fertility joke. But anyway, we were supposed to wrap each other's underwear in cellophane, so if you're trying to get out the door really fast, you couldn't get to your underwear because it's all in like
oh, that's brilliant.
Cellophane. Anyway.
That's brilliant.
Tips. Yeah. The potato famine.
The potato
that
famine.
That was us.
That was an inside job.
And it
job.
Was bad.
That was not an inside job. Wasn't it blight? It's a super easy to treat plant-based disease that like that's farmers spray for now, but back then there was no real way of treating it, and it spreads quite easily. So it basically decimated our entire potato crop, and Ireland was very reliant. You know, we do have fertile soil, but it's also, like I said, a very rainy, windy place. And you know, before fertilizers, root vegetables were probably the easiest thing to grow at the time, and so we became very dependent on them, especially like the poorer classes. And so when you're deprived of your main food source,
it's kind of shit.
It's a little bit shit.
It's not a great Christmas. No, did we help you? Did England come and help, or
no,
is that
no.
is that one of the things where it's kind of our
I
fault?
Actually learned about something
I was like,
recently.
I knew it would be our fault.
There was this expression that's kind of died out now. But so if you were someone like me, an Irish person who came over to London, a certain type of person during a certain time might accuse you of tasting the soup or getting the soup, or oh, I bet the soup tastes good. And it's basically do you know about this, Steve? I only learned about this recently. So it's back when the potato famine was happening, rather than send over any sort of, you know, aid, the Church of England instead sent over like missionaries who would establish soup kitchens to try and lure in the hungry masses. And now there's different levels of what they did. Some of them required you to convert, that you would be baptized on the spot to change.
Holy fuck.
Yes.
Quite true.
So that was like the extreme end of it. Others would just give it to you. You know what I mean? Like, but you would be very much be getting it from these missionaries. And so for very proud Irish people, like the Catholic Church would go, hey, it's better to die. It's better, you know, like the leader of your parish might be going, hey, it's better. It's more noble for you to starve rather than take the soup. Even if you weren't converting, if you were just going and seeking this aid, you know, this isn't the right way to go. This isn't very Catholic. I learned about that recently, and that's horrific.
That's scary.
Yeah. But no real help from our English buddies back then.
Soz. Yeah. We're not being much help since, really. It's
It wasn't just that. It wasn't just potatoes being grown here. There was other food being grown like for export. And rather than going, oh, okay, maybe we shouldn't take it out as usual, maybe we should give it to the people who don't have any of their own food, they're like, nah, fuck it. We're just going to keep on taking it out of the country while everyone around it starved.
So
Ireland never really recovered. We used to have 8 million people on the island before that.
Yeah.
It was in the 1850s. And afterwards, between 1 million people dying and people just emigrating constantly after that, like our population now is still only, I think it's about 5.5 on the whole island. So 4.5 here and 1 million up in the north.
Yeah, I think the last census was like 4.7 million in the Republic.
So it's never really bounced back to that.
No, like I remember hearing some like estimates about like if people hadn't emigrated and if those people hadn't died and we continued on the same population trajectory, you're talking maybe like 18 million, 19 million or something like that. Like, yeah, something significant. Because like the population is very... It's more dense in Dublin, obviously it's their capital, but it's very sparse on the more rural west coast. Mm. Very, very sparse. Not a very densely populated
island.
So
you're going to have loads of children?
Richie
it's
himself.
It's
going
to be like a country of Von Trapp families. So you're going
to
be like...
Yeah, I'm taking upon myself to repopulate Ireland.
I don't know. There's no shortage of children being made here. My mother has 9 brothers and sisters and my dad has 10.
Wow.
And that's pretty common.
Yeah, breeding like a Catholic rabbit was like...
But they just left. They didn't stay. They would emigrate and leave.
Yeah.
Why are they leaving now?
Now, well, I guess Richie's the person to ask that.
Yeah,
isn't he?
Why would you leave? Is it like a cultural curiosity thing? So, is it like a kind of opportunities, jobs?
It is, yeah. It's like it's both. So there is, like, we've been emigrating for generations and generations now. So there is this inbuilt, like, there's not social expectancy, but there is a precedent socially for, like, all of your friends going. There's a couple of factors. Like, Ireland's a very small island, so there's not a whole lot to it, you know what I mean? Like, you kind of have to go fly somewhere else if you want to go experience the wider world. It's a very it's getting better now, obviously, for sure, but for a long time it's a very homogenous place culturally, like 93% Catholic white in the 90s kind of deal, like very, very homogenous. So if you want to go experience the wider world, you have to go abroad. Also then like there's economic reasons, there's more work abroad. Like, again, that changed over time with the Celtic Tiger, when more foreign investments started coming in, more like American corporations coming in. There's more job opportunities then, but for the longest time there wasn't. So if you wanted to go away and earn your fortune and provide for your family back home, then you had to go abroad. More recently, it is maybe more of that, just like, hey, it's just a fun thing to do. And there, because we've been emigrating for so long, there's all of these systems in place that make it easier. So the J-1 visa, super easy to get when you're a college student, so you can go right over to the States for a couple of months, up to, I think, six certain versions of the J-1 visa. You can do a year and a half. Also, the visa I was on when I went to California, I was on an L-1 visa, which is an intra-company transfer visa. So if you work for an American company, you can just get an L1 visa and go over, and it's no problem at all. Like, Ireland has such good relationships with the likes of America, Canada, and Australia, that if you follow the procedures, and depending on the cutoff points they have, it can be pretty easy to go move to these places. And especially like London, it was very easy for me to come here as well.
Yeah, it was much easier with an Irish passport than a UK one.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just a combination of, like, the economic reasons, social reasons, and then just all these structures in place that just make it very... it's never easy to leave your home, obviously, and go to a foreign country. But all those things considered, it's easier than, say, I had a friend who lives in Tanzania, and he's now, I became friends with him in California, and the amount of effort he had to go through to obtain his American visa. And even when he goes home, then has to re-enter America, it's way more of a complicated process. Ireland is very lucky in the relationships we have with these main countries. Like, that's like that the people always emigrate to Australia, New Zealand, Canada, America, and the UK. Those are, like, the big ones.
I think Ireland is the only country in the world where the American immigration officers actually, they work in Dublin Airport. So if you're flying direct to the US from Dublin, you get your visa checked in Dublin by an American immigration official who has the gun and the badge and all the crap, and there's a picture of the president on the wall and all that.
Yeah, you go through the American consulate area, and it's just all American staff, and Barack Obama, or now Trump, was hanging up on the wall looking at you. they all have guns. It's just like, it's basically like American soil. It's like an extension of the embassy. And so then when you land, you just land in the domestic terminal. You're just like, that's how good the relations are between Ireland and America.
Too many questions can drive someone mad, so why don't we listen to an app?
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news?
All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Again,
well, actually the reason that they have that there isn't really because of good relations. Ireland back in the 80s and the 90s had a big problem of sending people to the US illegally, not just, like Richie's talking about all the nice ways to do it. Like most of my uncles and people that I know of my dad's mum's generation, they went there without a visa. They just went there to work illegally, and people still do quite a lot now as well. Like for example, I couldn't go to the US now unless I had a company sponsoring me, which isn't going to happen, but I know a lot of people that would just go get on a plane, stay there for 6 months and just work for cash. And it's really easy to get caught now because they just look at your in and out exit things and they go, you overstayed by your visa by 3 months. You were clearly working. So they ban you from ever entering the States again. And now they catch you in Dublin Airport and stop you from getting on the plane as opposed to going all the way to the States.
Yeah, so it's more like turn around, but we are not flying you back.
Oh, that's exactly. Interesting. That's,
yeah.
But the Irish government is like, oh, no, it's because of our good relations with America. Don't they love us so much?
Man, I fell for that hook, line, and sinker, didn't I?
I'm absorbing everything.
See, this is why I need Steve, because I'll just be like wide-eyed, like doe-eyed, just naive idiot going, oh, yeah, okay.
So another thing that's to do with that, I guess, is that like, especially when I've been to America, but just kind of anywhere, people are claiming to be Irish. And yes. Like, that's one of the things that I'm like, I have an Irish passport. I wouldn't say I was Irish.
Yeah.
And you know, like, especially in America, there was lots of people who were like, I have a great grandmother who was very Irish. Her name was O'Neill or O'Shara. I don't know. You know, how do you feel about so many people claiming to be Irish, especially if they can't get a passport? Like, is that weird?
I mean, I think like I'm of two minds for it. Before I went to the States, I was kind of whatever. I was very indifferent towards it. Didn't really have any strong feelings. It started to grate on me an awful lot while I was over there, particularly around, say, Paddy's Day. Mm-hmm. And I think it does go back to the thing I mentioned before about being a nation of immigrants. We just went to these places and put down roots. And we're very like, you know, we like Irish people would go in and like, especially like in like places like Boston, New York, would join law enforcement or would become journalists, you know. High profile things where you had a bit of influence and you had a bit of exposure and you got to be an extension of your country and your identity in this foreign place. And it just kind of spread from there. So it I guess it does stand to reason that this is the reaction now, but it does get very annoying when they mispronounce words or they call it St. Patty's Day and says it's St. Paddy's Day.
Yeah. That's
a big one. Yeah.
So but then like patty companies are getting on it. What even is a patty?
A patty. Oh, a patty is like a meat patty. You mean?
Yeah. Is that what it is?
Well, so
it's a burger.
Yeah,
it's a burger.
But like they're abbreviating Patrick to Patty because they think that's the correct abbreviation. But the real abbreviation is Paddy with two D's. You know, just things like that, like small things that like grate over time when you're over, like when I was over there, it just became too much.
Yeah.
Like my first Paddy's Day in America, I went to an Irish bar with some friends because they're like, oh, let's go for Paddy's Day with the Irish guy. It's going to be great. Let's just like sit in the corner and look at him. He'll do something Irish and we'll all clap and it'll be great. They took me to an Irish bar and I went up and I asked for a Guinness because, you know, Paddy's Day.
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, exactly. And they gave me, first of all, Guinness doesn't travel very well. And there's an awful lot of like, you know, there's a certain way of pouring it.
I used to work in a bar and I poured some bad Guinnesses and I got told about it. I did not let it sit for long enough before I topped that shit up. Welsh person. they're protecting you over there. They're really protecting the Guinness brand.
Exactly. But like when I was in this Irish bar on St. Paddy's Day, I asked for a Guinness and they poured it. They just didn't do any of the resting or anything like that. They just poured it really quickly, kind of splashed everywhere and gave it to me. And they presented it to me in a plastic Bud Light cup, like what you would get at like a shitty festival.
See, I know that's sacrilege.
Yeah, that's the
how do I know that part of?
Speaking to those moments, I find those very annoying. But the whole idea of, hey, I'm Irish, or getting in on things on Paddy's Day, or celebrating that heritage, especially in America where they are a melting pot and they're made up of a lot of different cultures. And if you want to have a strong like sense of cultural identity, you do kind of have to reach back that way. So I do think it's good to that end. It's just that some of the smaller things just grate on me a little bit. Yeah. What about you, Steve?
I like it that people can identify as being Irish as like a second identity. I don't care if someone who has an Irish great-grandparent wants to call themselves Irish, or someone who has an Irish parent wants to call themselves Irish. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's up to yourself to give yourself what identity you want. It doesn't hurt me if you call yourself Irish.
Yeah, just don't serve me shitty Guinness and we'll get on just fine.
Just don't order a Guinness. Don't order Guinness in America. It's very simple.
Lucky Charms at you.
Yeah. Oh my God, Lucky Charms. Yeah,
so profiting off Irish, like... identity is interesting
as
well.
The shock, like, I got in the States when people didn't know, like, they assumed Lucky Charms like the national dish over here. It's like, it's not. We never, it's, if we, like, if we want to get Irish or Lucky Charms, we have to, like, order them in from America and they're obscenely expensive.
Is it true that top of the morning is not a thing as well?
It's not a thing.
It's all lies.
It's not a thing.
It's all marketing.
It's not a thing.
It's actually top of the, it's top of the evening.
Yeah.
Top of the evening. It's the bottom of the evening and top of the morning, surely.
Yes.
Depending on how much you're drinking.
Depends on how many Guinness you had. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, okay. Here's my most serious question.
Mm-hmm.
Are the IRA terrorists, in your opinion? And do you think that the British attitude to the IRA is a bit weird? Because a lot of people, so Jeremy Corbyn was recently slated for, at some point in his career, having written for I think it was in magazine that somebody from the IRA had also written for, and like in Britain, any association with the IRA or any mention of them is like terrorists, mm-hmm. awful people, but nobody really knows what they stood for,
mm-hmm.
and I find it a bit weird. And I've recently been thinking a lot about terrorists because also do not, like, suffragettes, do they count as terrorists? They did bomb things.
Right.
Anyway.
I'll let Steve answer this. Steve would be the one to answer this.
My opinion on this has actually developed a bit. So about, like, over the last 10 years, 10 years ago, I would have immediately said, yeah, terrorists, mm-hmm. they didn't have to do all that. That was just disgusting, terrible violence, not necessary. But I've talked to a lot more people from Northern Ireland. The IRA is really a Northern Irish thing. It's not really a thing that me or Richie would have had much experience with firsthand. When I was growing up, I grew up in Dublin first until I was a teenager. And when I was driving up to my mother's from Donegal, which is in the northwest of the Republic, but it's actually more north than Northern Ireland, but not part of Northern Ireland.
Mm.
So it's kind of confusing. But the quickest way to get there is to drive through Northern Ireland. And in the 90s, we had to stop at British Army checkpoints. And my parents had to explain where they were going, what was in the car, how long they would drive through and all that kind of stuff, which is a bit strange because we're driving through roads on our own country. Mm. That's all gone now since the peace process in the late 90s, because the violence has stopped. So they don't really need them. The last time I remember getting stopped actually was in the 2000s when I was living in Donegal driving the other way. My dad was driving me down to an Eminem concert when I was 16.
Yeah.
I think I was 16, I guess.
I can see you there.
Oh, man.
I guess I was 16.
Shaved.
Will the real Irish people please stand up?
Slim O'Shady.
But we were driving, it must have been actually 2003 or 2004, because if I was 16, it would have been like about then. So we were just driving through one of the towns in the morning. I guess it was like, it wasn't too late, too early because there was sunlight, but a British soldier, he must have been about 18, was just walking down the street with a huge big machine gun on patrol. And he put his hand up, got my dad to stop. Dad rolled down the window immediately, because you're talking to someone in authority who's holding a machine gun, you start to get nervous. So the soldier was like, "All right, mate, where are you going to?" He's like, "Oh, I'm just driving my son down to the concert." And then awkward silence. "I just want to try the drugs before he does. Ha, 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 ha." And then the soldier just kind of looks at him and goes, "All right, mate, drive on."
Oh, my God.
So then I think pretty much immediately after that, those soldiers were gone. And there's a couple of bases now, but they don't have the patrol like they used to. Mm. But the IRA, they did a lot of very bad things. So I guess it's pretty understandable that if you're English, you would hate them, because they did put bombs in pubs in England and killed innocent civilians who had nothing to do with the conflict that was going on in a different place. So yes, that was horrendous and awful. But the place that they came from was Northern Ireland, where the Protestant majority of 60% of the people kept the Catholic minority of 40% totally under their thumb. They used to, like, draw the boundaries of the electoral districts to make sure that they never got any representation in government. So it was always run by Protestants. There was no state jobs, which was a big thing in Northern Ireland, still is for Catholics. And the police were 100% Protestant and were pretty discriminatory against Catholics. So it was really like, and at the 100% like semi-apartheidic kind of system, where you had a second-class citizens living in their country. And in the 60s, when all these civil rights movements were going on around the world, The Catholics thought that it was their opportunity to kind of join in. So they started marching in big, like, peaceful protest movements to try and get some rights. And in, I can't remember, I think it might have been 68, they had a march in Derry and or Londonderry, as you call it, if you're unionist inclined. They marched there, and the British Army had been on the streets because there had been some trouble. But the actual British Army were there to protect Catholic populations against Protestants from attacking them. So wow, a lot of the Catholic people were actually, yeah, they were actually happy to see the British soldiers there because they were saving them from getting attacked. But on Bloody Sunday, the British Army did some, for some stupid reason, it's still being investigated, they opened fire on the civilians and killed 13 people, 13 entirely innocent people who had nothing to do with anything because they said that they were getting fired upon. I think it's been pretty well established that they actually weren't, and it was just a total overreaction that these people died for nothing. And then immediately after that, people that were wanted freedom didn't really see any other option except for going for violence. So a lot of them joined up with the IRA. I heard another story when I was up there from, he's a man who runs a peace center in Enniskillen on the site of like the last big bomb of Northern Ireland, where like 20 people died in the town. There's actually like a peace center where they take in kids from around the world and use the Northern Ireland conflict to try and teach them about how to get peace. And he runs that center now on the site of where the bomb went off. And he was telling me, he told his story first to the kids from all around the world at this program I was on. But then later on, I was in the pub with him, and then he told me the rest of the real story. So his father tried to march for peace back around the same time and nearly got beaten to death by the Northern Irish police. And then his brother immediately joined the IRA and went into Donegal in my county in the Republic to like some training camp in the hills. And he had to go and drive into that camp and try and get his brother to come home and stop him from joining up. So you hear these kind of stories still coming out now, and a lot of people, like, you don't really talk about it. So you could have an uncle or someone in your town that would be of that age when they could have been in the IRA, but no one would talk about it now. You would never, ever mention it. So you would never know. It's just, it's always kept under key now. Like a lot of people in Ireland, in the Republic now, will say, we hate the IRA, we hate Sinn Féin. If we were in that position, we would have kept it peaceful. But you, like, to use the old hippie thing from Vietnam, you weren't there, man. You don't know.
Is that
like, it's impossible. Yeah. It's impossible to say what you would do in that kind of a situation. Things were really tough. And then it turned into a horrific war where people were living in terrible conditions for decades. Mm. It's kind of over. It's mostly over now, you know, touch wood. And they forced the two parties to come together and govern together. And they, like, the Catholics have pretty much good rights now. You can live a happy and full life if you're part of the Catholic. I think nearly the population's nearly 50-50 at this stage. And I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if there was a referendum up there to reunite Ireland, that the Northern Irish will actually go, nah, you're okay. We're okay with being part of the UK for now anyway.
Yeah, until we fuck up with Brexit.
Yeah, well, that is going to fuck things up quite
TBC,
a lot.
Yeah, TBC. Interesting. I mean, I don't know. I think it's, I guess we gloss over a lot of history like and forget the controversies of it, depending on who's won. But I definitely, the more I look into like the history of the suffragette movement, I'm like, yeah, we definitely wouldn't have got there without bombing, like putting bombs in post boxes and stuff. Like, you know, I don't know. It's very, and the same with Nelson Mandela. Like,
yeah,
he definitely would have been classed as a terrorist. Like,
I mean, that's inherent in revolution is, you know, you're revolting against something.
Yeah, but I think it's interesting because in Britain, at least, like, you know, even the mention that Jeremy Corbyn might have smelt somebody who was in the IRA is like, oh, shame on your character.
Yeah, that's really hypocritical because that's the whole, like, actually Sinn Féin, they're the political movement in Ireland and Northern Ireland that came from what was the IRA. And they're totally peaceful now and are just a regular political party and just as annoying as all the other ones now. But they are basically the guys who used to be the IRA. And like Gerry Adams, the figure that everyone knows, it used to be that when he spoke on Irish television, you weren't allowed to hear the voice of a speaker for the IRA. So they actually had to record someone else saying his words and they dubbed it over.
Really? What, because the voice would be persuasive or like what? Or is it just like hiding his identity?
No. He was there like at a press conference speaking. But in the Republic of Ireland, you weren't allowed to hear the voice of an IRA spokesperson, but they still, for some reason, wanted to hear what he was saying. So to get around the censorship law that existed from whenever, they would have like me speaking instead.
And now he's a Twitter celebrity.
Well, the guy who
he's a Twitter celebrity.
Really?
Yeah. That's some pretty crazy tweets.
Gerry Adams. Okay. He's actually the guy that Jeremy Corbyn gets in trouble with having met and having familiar relations with.
That's crazy.
Because they're like, in fairness, I don't really, it's not that misunderstandable because, I mean, they're both old hippies. So
yeah, I mean, they all know each other, don't they? There's an old hippie network. Yeah. So in general, with Irish stereotypes,
sorry.
There's lots, but also there's lots of laws that you guys have that we don't, or that so is it true that you don't charge people for water? That's not a thing.
So for the longest time that was the case. There was no water charge. Then it was a very controversial issue. When was this, Steve? About 2 years ago? 3 years
ago?
Well,
that's actually not true. There was water charges until the 90s. Then they got rid of them. And then they tried to bring them back a couple of years.
So just no charge for water?
No charge for water.
Is that, I've never heard of that.
For about 20 years.
Yeah. So there was no charge. It was just like a free commodity. Then they tried to bring it back in. They installed water meters everywhere. There were huge protests about it. They offered these incentives. So you got like, I think there was like, Steve, was there like a cashback program? So if you signed up for it, you got money back or you didn't have to pay the first year or something, some sort of incentive. Yeah, like they were having such problems with putting this out. And then I think it proved to be so difficult that they eventually just, they've now stopped doing it, Steve, haven't they? I was away when all this was, this basically all happened while during the period where I was away. But now it's gone back to being a free resource.
Like, we didn't have any property tax before the recession either. So like 2008, Ireland's economy went off a cliff and we had to like change lots of things in the taxation system to try and get some money to run the country. Mm. And the EU came in and told us what we were doing wrong as well. So one of the things is that you weren't charging property tax, which most other countries in the world do. So that came in. It wasn't that controversial. People's like income taxes went up, loads of social services were cut and like just general kind of austerity shit. But then the final thing that they tried to bring in was water charges. And for some reason that just drove people ballistic. Yeah. You had hundreds of thousands of people marching against it.
Like this
people standing in the, like when the construction workers were trying to put the water meters in the street, people would like run into the middle of their workspace and just stand in the hole that they were trying to work in and say,
kind
work
of amazing.
Around me.
That's kind of amazing.
Yeah, it's great. Well,
These would be like old grannies as well. And like, record me. Put this up on the YouTube.
It's so weird because I think it's interesting when you get into the intricacies of different laws of countries that are so close together, because it makes you think like, oh, maybe I am against water charges. I never thought about it. Never thought that, because I've always paid a water bill. Like, I've never thought that it could be. But then again, I guess like with the abortion laws being so different.
That's a big one.
Is that, at what point did, you know, you must have like at some point been in adolescence and learnt what abortion was, learnt that you couldn't do it. Obviously you can't do it. Sorry.
There's a lot of reasons why I can't do it.
Good luck with that. Do you ever remember like learning that in the UK it was legal to have an abortion? Like,
well, see, here's the thing. We don't have it, but we do, because we actually have the same rates of abortion as people getting abortion as any other Western country. They just go to the UK.
Mm. Yeah.
So everyone knows someone that had to do it. And I've always just known.
Yeah.
So it's the typical Irish solution. You just ignore it and pretend that it's okay, when in fact that everyone is still actually doing it.
Yeah. So that people are going on holiday to the UK and then coming back.
Basically,
not pregnant. But again, that creates a class divide, I guess, because you have to have the money to go over.
Yes.
And that's weird.
It's a big problem.
It's huge.
Do your Irish friends talk about it a lot, or is it kind of thing of like everyone agrees that like
now it's
huge.
Yeah, it's huge. Mm. It's like the defining issue for our generation.
Yeah.
Like going forward now, like again, there was the equal marriage referendum that happened 2 years ago, and that was huge and defining, obviously, as well. Like, this is the thing about Ireland's like, politically speaking, socially speaking, it's a very kind of exciting place, and for good and bad reasons. Like, you are looking at a very accelerated transition. So over the course of like a short period of time, like Steve and I, our lifetimes, like you start off with divorce being illegal up until 1996 and homosexuality being illegal up until what, Steve, the early 90s. And you now look at, like, 2 years ago, Ireland was the first country to bring in equal marriage through a referendum. Mm-hmm. Like that, like over that such a short time scale, like that's incredible growth. So to be a country that that was in such a stranglehold from the Catholic Church, like in the 80s, we had the highest church attendance rate, us in the Philippines, the highest church attendance rate in the world. Mm. Like in the world, we have the highest church attendance rate. And now it's like rapidly diminishing. And we are kind of moving out of this mist of ignorance that kind of came along with that. Mm. And now it seems like really quickly addressing the, feels like we're addressing some of these particular social issues and trying to have discussions around them. Like it is talked about at length, at least with our generation.
I find it really fascinating as well, because I think that, and I'm about to make some huge disgusting generalizations, but sure. Like I feel that because subconsciously for British people, or at least I can say for English people, because we have a monarch who is like explicitly like Anglican Christian, our prime minister has to be Anglican Christian. And right. Like, you know, like every school is Anglican songs, like, you know,
Tony Blair was a Catholic.
Oh yeah, well, look what he did.
Well, that says that,
Father,
doesn't it?
Forgive us for Tony fucking Blair. But like, you know, like in general, like it's this unspoken like part of our formal culture. So mm-hmm. I feel like in a home way and in a more like social way, religion is completely invisible for most people in the UK. Like I that's again a huge generalization, but and somebody who grew up Christian and it was definitely part of my culture, the difference between me and my friends who didn't grow up Christian is huge. Like there's no talk of religion in the home, whereas you know, because of the history of Ireland, it's unavoidable.
Do you think
you do it in your national school? Like 95% of national schools are run by the Catholic Church, paid for by the state, run by the church, which really pisses me off still today. And like Richie will remember as well, you do your Catholic sacraments, your communion, your confession, your confirmation, all the different stages that you do when you're a kid. You do that as part of your education. Like you take time off school to go over with, and the church is usually right beside the school because they're built on the church.
The teacher
grounds.
Brings the class a walk from the school to the church. And the teacher the is part stuff. Of built into the curriculum, like under the religious section.
Oh, so you can't not?
You can. Like, so there was one or two kids in my class who were, I don't know what faith they were of, but for whatever, they were taken out and they were, they just went off, and I think they got some private tutor and they did some other learning while
for
that was happening.
For me, when I was in Donegal, I actually lived in a split community. So as like most places in Ireland would be entirely Catholic, but the town I lived in was actually half Protestant, half Catholic, and the Protestants had their own national school, and we wouldn't see each other until we went to secondary school, to high school.
Wow.
Like when you're 10 or 11.
So did you grow up not knowing any Protestants?
I did know them because my parents run the pub and
like alcohol, that great peacemaker.
I remember actually my grandfather, Catholic Donegal man, was talking to a local frequenter of the bar, a guy called George Ilfella, who always told the same story every night about when they took the trains out of Donegal in 1956. And I was like, Jesus Christ, not again.
Hey, Steve, what happened when they took the trains out of Donegal in 1956?
No, it's horrific. It's like NAMM flashbacks here. I'm not going to do that again. But I remember one time my grandfather was out in the pub for whatever reason, locked drunk. And he knew George from ages ago.
For whatever reason. To get drunk, Steve.
So he knew George from years back. And they were both like, it doesn't matter whether you're Catholic or you're Protestant, you both end up in the same place, a fucking hole in the ground.
Wiser words.
Yeah, and I was like, Jesus, that's really bleak.
That's the most profound thing
could have said that about 100 years earlier. Yeah. Could have saved us some shit. Yeah.
That's the most profound thing that was ever shouted at me in the midst of alcohol fumes. That's great.
But then that was the small village, and then there's a bigger town next over called Killybegs, and that was an entirely Catholic town, and they people in there used to say, oh, you can't go to that bar in Brooklis because that's a Protestant stronghold. Even though like both my parents were Irish Catholics and my dad was from Dublin, entirely Catholic. In fact, like my brother had a girlfriend when he was 11 who was a Protestant, and my Dublin aunties were like, don't you bleed bring a Protestant back to us. We'll batter. I was like, you're only half joking, I know that.
Yeah, that's it. What are we talking about?
Religious side of how we're growing up, I guess.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to, it's an exciting time to be Irish, I think. Like, there's a lot of stuff happening very quickly. Yeah, welcome. Welcome to the shit show.
I mean, I feel like if I moved to Ireland and lived there maybe 10 years, mm-hmm. and I also have a passport and a history, then I'd be like, here's a question. Mm. At what point am I Irish?
Whenever you want to be.
Yeah. Do you have
an Irish mother. Well, you can be Irish.
Now I know all about the fact that that we didn't teach you about Catholicism. I feel like I'm really on the way.
Yeah, you've got red hair, you've got an Irish passport. You're more Irish than I am right now.
What? So Lena, is your mother's actually a Protestant, is she?
Yes, she is a Presbyterian.
And she,
she's Church of Ireland, and then my granddad, basically because they lived in Dublin, loads of shit was going down. I don't know when this was. This must have been like the 60s. Mm. And my mum, I think she got married when she was about 10. There was four of them, so I think the others were a lot older,
right.
and identified much more strongly as Irish. They all moved to Aberdeen because of there was a lot of like shit going down in Dublin around the 60s, apparently. So they were like, nah. But yeah, my granddad was a minister.
Wow.
So, and he was like,
there wasn't actually too much going on in Dublin. Like when the troubles were going on in the north, the IRA thing, Ireland was out, the south of Ireland was actually pretty well spared. There was like one bomb went off in Dublin and Monaghan one day. Apart from that, it was kind of okay.
What was he moving for then?
Actually what I was going to say. So in the 20s, whenever Ireland became independent, all of the Catholics were like, fuck this, and left. So like it used to be about 30% Catholic to Protestant. Mm. And then by a couple of decades later, it was like 9% Protestant, 90% Catholic, because they just left. They didn't feel comfortable. So I guess maybe when the troubles were starting up, maybe that's what your granddad was thinking.
I think it also might have been to do with what school they could get into, because there weren't that many Protestant schools, so they were really struggling to get them an education.
Yeah.
I think that was maybe it. Yeah. Who can say? but it's interesting as well, because I think my granddad did have this feeling of also being Scottish, because mm-hmm. he knew from like generations before, and he, you know, that they were a family where like I think they had two sons and they both became ministers, so they had mm-hmm. to give up the farm because of that, and I think that was like a big thing, because obviously the reason they were there
right
in the first place.
Well, another name for the Protestants in Northern Ireland is Scots-Irish. Like sometimes they'd identify themselves as that, yeah, rather than British-Irish or whatever, they say Scots-Irish. And there's actually in America, in the Deep South, there like a lot of those guys would have emigrated 400 years ago, but they would still call themselves Scots-Irish.
Because you're like, forgive me, but
you
like,
can stop saying forgive me.
The Welsh, the Scottish, and the Irish are all in some way Gaelic, but in different ways. Is that right?
Yep.
And so, like, okay, I didn't know. I wanted to check. That was my only comment on that.
So that's pretty easy. So the Celts, they hung around longer in like they used to be all over the British Isles. Mm. But I guess the Romans pushed them out of what is England now and pushed them into the corners.
Yeah.
And they couldn't be arsed going to Ireland. They called it Hibernia because it was too cold. And so the Celts had an easy there. But then they were okay in Scotland and Wales.
Yeah.
So then afterwards, the guys who were left over in England were a little bit different, which is why you had like, oh, yeah, these are the Gaelic nations today and the English are the different ones.
Yeah, that makes sense. So interesting. Okay, right. Last thing. Mm-hmm. So like there's lots of stereotypes that I could pick out and be like, does this annoy you? Does this annoy you? But I'm not going to do that because it will annoy you at once. But like, do you have an example of like the weirdest situation you've been in to do with your Irishness, or like the weirdest thing somebody said to you about your Irishness?
Oh.
When I had a housemate who was Irish, she like I put on PS I Love You. She nearly fucking hit the roof.
Oh yeah.
People hate PS I Love You.
Yeah. I've never watched
actually,
it.
Actually, when I was living in Scotland, that came out, and all the Scottish girls were like, "Oh my god, I want to go over to Dublin and find my Jerry." Who I don't know. I think I haven't actually seen it either, but I'm pretty sure he was played by Jerry Butler, who was from the town in Scotland where I was living. Yeah. So you want to go to Ireland to find the guy who's from around the corner from where we're sitting now?
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
And there's also the Ed Sheeran song, which that's really... That's a tender...
That's a delicate...
I already didn't like Ed Sheeran, so it was okay.
But he was excellent in Game of Thrones, wasn't he, Steve?
Yes.
Yeah. I got a lot of it when I was in America. An awful lot of stereotypes. The Lucky Charm stuff we kind of talked about. I got a lot of that. I got a lot of people assuming that I drank a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I got an awful lot of that. what other stuff? So there's a good friend of mine over there. He came to Ireland as part of a trip around Europe, and I took him around Dublin, and the thing that he commented on the most and still comments to this day was the distinct lack of beautiful redheaded women. That's like,
oh, wow, that was
had,
like
he had in his head that he's like, I'm gonna go over there and I'm going to be, it's gonna be, yeah, strawberry fields forever of just of just beautiful redhead Irish women. But there wasn't. At least to his, I don't know what ratio he had in mind of just like scanning around the heads of like the crowds on the common street.
There are more ginger people in
there
Ireland.
Are statistically, yeah, but I think he was just wanted like just like to drown in
like
a ginger
a
sea,
of
yeah, and that didn't happen. He still like takes it as a personal insult, as if I was misleading him the whole time. Like this is the Eldorado.
Did you take all the ginger women?
Yeah, I don't know, but so I got that kind of stuff. Actually, it's funny because there was a study that was done a while ago of people's perceptions of beauty as done by like race and culture, and people perceived that Irish women were one of the most beautiful nations, like one of the most beautiful races, and Irish men were one of the ugliest. That was a perception people had in their head. Yeah, like we were at both ends of the spectrum.
Be like Irish men batting up since
it's
the
like
turn of
it's because people when they think of like when you think about the kind of like when you just in your head think okay, you know, stereotypical Irish girl, they're probably thinking long flowing red hair, pale skin.
Oh, so it weren't actual pictures of actual Irish girls.
No, they weren't.
Just
it's
like
perception.
The idea
it's
of,
all
okay.
perception. But when they thought about men, just spud-headed farmers with crabby old skin. Yeah, basically just ginger, pale, pasty farmer tan kind of deal. So that one hurt when
brutal.
I read that study. That one hurt.
Brutal.
I mean,
yeah, but we're also called the most charming.
Yeah,
actually,
yeah,
there's a good story. Well, from that rural pub my parents used to run, there was a random American lady just drinking there one night, and it was a quiet night, so it was just her and the local young guys just drinking pints with my dad, who was working, and they were like, "Oh, so like, where are the best men in the world that you've come across in your travels?" And she goes, "Oh, well, Native Americans are the best lovers." But Irish men are the most charming. And then she turns to one of the guys and goes, "What's your name?" And he goes, "Geronimo Murphy." So I guess he kind of proved it right.
Oh, that's excellent. That's excellent. Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Cool. Do you think that's it?
You feel better informed?
I feel better. I feel this has been like the cultural clinic.
Yeah.
And I have had a plaster on my ignorance. It will probably still bleed.
Wait, did we just rip the plaster off? What's the metaphor here?
I'm not sure.
Do we put the plaster on?
You do metaphors, or? You're Irish. Yeah. That's the thing.
That's it. Yeah, let's end on a stereotype. Probably the most complimentary stereotype I've ever gotten.
Let's go and watch, what was it? Lord of the Dance. Did you ever watch that? Or River Dance?
No, that's...
It's like, no. Okay, we're going to stop the podcast so Richie can kill me and throw me out the window. Cool. Thanks for coming on, guys. And where can we find you?
We are on whatampolitics.com. It's probably the best central place to find everything. We're also whatampolitics. Whatampolitics is such a stupid name. One of the benefits of
you'll find it.
Yeah, you'll find it. You'll find it. Like, no one else was jumping for the whatampolitics URL or Twitter handle. So we're on, whatampolitics, Twitter, Facebook, Gmail, and whatampolitics.com.
Perfect.
Yeah, episodes every other Tuesday.
It's super good. I'm not going to admit how much I've learned from that podcast because I totally listen to it and then pretend I already knew. And I'm like,
oh, you could be a co-host.
Like Brexit, helpful.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, thank you for coming on, both of you.
Thank you, Lena.
Thank you.
Stupid questions.
Bottom of the evening to you.
Bottom of the. Oh, I know. Do you want to do my accent? Not do yours. Both of you. I want your British accent. Go.
Okay. I've done this on the podcast before. Do you want some bangers and mash?
Why'd you go up?
It's the only way I can.
Oh, because Englishmen are
effeminate.
Oh
no, the Queen's in the bedroom again. Hit her with a broom. Hit her with a broom. It's the only way.
Hit her with a chimney sweep.
Don't look at her directly in the eyes. You'll turn into plaid.
Into a corgi. Okay, you do Irish.
Wait, no, we need Steve to do.
Oh yeah, Steve.
Go on, Steve.
All right, my name's Lena Normington Innick.
Oh wow! This speaks of a
that's well English, Steve.
A man who used to be a teenager who's really into rap. Sounded like I was a grime artist.
Nice. Okay.
What's a grime?
What's a grime?
I don't know what a grime is.
Do you want grime music?
No.
Grime?
No,
grime? No. What?
Yeah, just repeating the word grime isn't going to enlighten me anymore, Lena.
It's like. It's like British hip hop rap. It's called grime. It's a whole thing.
Is it?
Yeah. So you know, like Corbyn did stuff. Grime for Corbyn.
Oh wow. Okay.
Mate, you need to get on this. Anyway, yeah, not the point. We'll leave your ignorance behind.
Yeah, we'll do a while on grime.
Stop deflecting from the point here, Lena.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it, Richie. I'll forgive you. Don't you worry. Now it's getting all like Welsh. Top of the morning to ya.
Oh no.
It's a bit serious, Rowan, and that wasn't
so
too
what's
bad.
The problem in Ireland? Why can't you all get on?
Oh god, Steve, she's having a stroke.
Why are you talking from the side of her mouth?
Yeah, no, she's melting in front of me right now.
Oh dear. Okay. Well, they're gonna revoke my Irish passport after this, so it's been nice.
What a wonderful way to end.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
See ya.
I giggled the whole way through listening back to this recording on Richie and Steve, like an absolute pair. An absolute pair. Do go and listen to What and Politics. Thank you so much for listening. Do tell me what you think of this episode. Sorry if I sound a bit bugged up. I've got to that Christmas flu. Who else has it? I have it. If you liked this episode, please rate and review us on iTunes. It's the way that other people find the podcast. Tell a friend, join our newsletter so you can be the first to hear about the podcasts. Thank you so much for listening. It is time for me to log off and bug off.
If there's questions you pretend you know or are too scared to ask, then listen, mate, you're in the right place, cause Lena's got your back.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.